This week in the parish of Bourses and Market Structures, SIBO flings a gauntlet. Is Blue Ocean the tide towards 24-hour trading? And DB1 posts a good Q1. My name is Patrick L. Young. Welcome to the Bourse Business Weekly Digest. It's the Exchange Invest Weekly Podcast, episode 242. Good day, ladies and gentlemen. This is a very brief reduction of highlights amongst the key headlines from the week in market structure. All the analysis of the many events and happenings from the past 7 days can be found in Exchange Invest's daily subscriber newsletter, the unique guide to the Bourse business sent daily to your inbox. More details at exchangeinvest.com. Over in BitCarnage, I've had somewhat of an epiphany about stablecoins. Now, buying stablecoins as an investment and thinking they're supremely safe still strikes me as a fool's errand, as various such coins do not seem to be backed by entirely plausible, viable paper. However, there are deals that can make sense in one way or another, and most of all, stablecoins as settlement instruments makes a great deal of sense. Anyway, IOSG and Kraken Ventures, they led a $7 million funding round for a stablecoin developer, Usual Labs, according to The Block. And at the same time, there's a winning app looming. I mean, broadly, no one's stablecoin dominating per se, because a bipartisan development has taken place where US Senators Loomis and Gillibrand are taking on stablecoin legislation with a new bill. It's a case of US Senators Cynthia Loomis, a Republican for Wyoming, and Kirsten Gillibrand, a Democrat from New York, tailoring a very narrowly focused bill seeking to define how stablecoins, cryptocurrencies that maintain value with some other asset or currency, will operate in the US. However, a crypto advocacy group claims stablecoin bill would violate free speech rights, according to Cointelegraph. The issue is in the Gillibrand-Loomis stablecoin bill seeking to outlaw algorithmic stablecoins, which the Coin Center group see as an attack on code, aka free speech rights, First Amendment, and thus unconstitutional. Otherwise, the group seems to support the proposed act. I'm not so sure this argument holds water. Here's a definition of the product via The Block, and the truth of the matter is, it seems to me the ban is intentioned not because the algorithmic stablecoins have code and use it, but rather because they tend to operate under collateralized, and therefore, as they are under collateralized, each tech function they use to seek to maintain their value at par with the coin sounds wildly whizzy, exciting, and not stable at all, which I think is the point of the Gillibrand-Loomis bill. In the show notes, you can get more details and a link to that article in The Block, Algorithmic Stablecoins, What Are They and How Do They Try to Hold Their Peg, if you need more definitional insight. If you enjoyed this excerpt, you may be interested to know that you can read BitCarnage every day on Exchange Invest. Alternatively, if you want to follow BitCarnage, the daily update on happenings in the world of crypto and digital assets, you can find BitCarnage as a separate standalone product on Substack. As to the week in exchanges, heaven forfend I might pith another word into your spell checker, but in a world where all they talk about counter-cyclical at the bar during their conferences, the central bankers and related folk ought to consider a new word, counter-logical. The FSB, which has a single function, has come up with some fascinating concepts for the Financial Stability Board to help make markets CCP et al. Safer. The trouble is, we're on the cusp of a baby bathwater throwing repo here. Perhaps not quite yet, but it's coming soon. In the FSB world, everything that isn't a bank is a massive risk. I, being a bit old school sometimes in my digital revolutionary fervour, actually think the big risk is letting the banks do what they want, then rewarding them with government bailouts and nary a slap on the wrist. Anyway, the FSB sees non-bank financial institutions everywhere. It sees folk with a balance sheet doing a lot of commerce. To that end, they have moved on to various enterprises, including funds and commodity traders. Now, funds ought indeed to stay as liquid as they need to allow redemption, even if that means adhering to odd rules, as per the EU and application of fund rules, even when the fund holds a lot of private equity or other private investments. Anyway, while I'm all for exchanges, I'm also all for general commerce. And frankly, if a big commodity trader is to be restricted from holding illiquid commodities, that is not going to help world trade. A little common sense in risk is welcome, But then again, the people with the least common sense in a bubble are traditionally banks. Of course, the FSB are concerned with their definition of FS as in financial stability, and that means we have to be very careful they don't overstep the mark and harm the broader economy through their obsession with that other PLY-invented word of the moment, superliquidity. Elsewhere, Cboe is in elbow-sharpening mode as it seeks to force its listing franchise in between the US country club duopoly, while the parish has been paying farewell and tribute to the MGEX CEO, Mark Bagan, who has passed away. A big change theme reverberates throughout the parish during the course of the last week, with acute impacts in Hong Kong and indeed also South Africa. NYSE are thinking about 24-hour trading, which suggests the hot ticket in the bourse business right now is Blue Ocean, which has inverted some elements of the ATS model to deliver a very fast-moving new kid not on the block, but rather offering a lot of lovely niche of mellifluous trades in many names at any size. Exciting times and lots to consider. Income up 16% in Q1 2024 for DB1 is encouraging, with 10% from SimCorp being integrated and 6% from generic growth, albeit erstwhile powerhouse Eurex disappoints in fixed income and equity derivatives. The good news is Denmark's treasured stock exchange will be rebuilt after the devastating fire, but a long and expensive journey of restoration lies ahead. The FT architecture correspondent Edwin Heathcote, meanwhile, delivered a beautiful article about exchange buildings against the background of the Copenhagen fire. Farewell to stock exchanges. Fire is not their only enemy. Again, on the Exchange Invest website, you can manage to find the show notes for this with the link. In the broader EU, the FT once again states a majority of EU states object to capital markets reform push. Then again, EU stasis is better than a top-down catastrophe as proposed currently. Europe needs a lot more markets, not fewer, in every way. But then again, the EU needs to wholeheartedly embrace the notion of markets at the expense of corporate socialism and the precautionary principle. Former Italian PM Enrico Letta has recommended the creation of an EU deep tech stock exchange, which appears to contradict the apparent EU thinking in terms of a monopoly marketplace or at worst an oligopoly in the latest still considered version of capital markets union. Let a thousand markets bloom is a great rallying cry, which I entirely believe in, and Letta is spot on. But the EU is a post-capitalist structure for the aspirational, so long as aspirational means you wish to be an apparatchik amongst the bureaucrats of future decline. There's some good news on fees. Minimum brokerage commission has been abolished by the SEC of the Philippines. China's market regulator has launched five measures to help rescue Hong Kong's battered stock market, reports the South China Morning Post, which ought to facilitate IPOs in Hong Kong and Stock Connect in both directions. South Africa's JSE also announced a significant listings shake-up plan. The FT also headlined a fascinating article, New York Stock Exchange Test Views and Round-the-Clock Trading, and then began to obsess about the formative and not yet regulated 24 Exchange, whereas the real story is the blue ocean tide driving US stock trading in Asia. There was a lot more insight about that this week in Exchange Invest, available to all our subscribers via exchangeinvest.com. In results, one big headline set of results this week. Q1 2024 for Deutsche Börse Group. A 16% income leap with 10% coming from the newly integrated SimCorp balance sheet and 6% from generic growth. Given the outperforming trading segments were commodities, 18% up, and power, 39% up, one is left to wonder why EEX boss Peter Reitz is not the incoming DB1 Group CEO. Although, to be fair, gas price income was actually down 6% year-on-year for Q1. Meanwhile, financial derivatives income dropped 8%, fixed income ETD was flat, and equity derivatives were down 21%. Clearly the European Union's efforts to, how might one put it politely, prefer Eurex need a lot more work. Thanks for listening to Exchange Invest Weekly. We welcome your feedback. You can contact me directly, patrick@derivativesvision.com, with any comments. Meanwhile, if you enjoyed this show, we would welcome you giving us a thumbs up. Or if you have time, a positive review will always be welcome, wherever you find this podcast. In new markets this week, the Ethiopian Bourse ESX is targeting an equity and debt trading listing from September. This week's other new market is a dumb idea which won't work. If you don't understand why, it has a lot to do with differential pricing centred in the USA, as well as a transport oligopoly. Anyway, Russia has submitted a proposal to the BRICS countries to create a grain exchange, which has zero chance of being a success. Two snippets for deals news this week. The merger of stock exchanges at Gift City is in an advanced stage. It's a fascinating prospect, as BSE and NSE would stay independent in India, but their respective GIFT City overseas-facing entities would become one market. Valuation share split currently clear under negotiation. Thus, BSE subsidiary India INX, which was first inaugurated on January the 9th, 2017 in GIFT City, could merge with the wholly owned National Stock Exchange subsidiary NSE IX. NSE IX having been announced a few months later in June the 5th, 2017 and launched on July the 4th, 2023. They, of course, launched the Nifty Futures Complex in cooperation with SGX, which had previously been a bugbear for Indian regulators. This is an interesting deal, albeit I can imagine the owner's stake negotiations may prove fraught. In our other deal news this week, it's on the IPO block. The roadshow has begun. Marex Group and shareholders are seeking to raise up to $323 million in a US IPO. Meanwhile, if you're looking for some reading in the world of finance and fintech, don't forget to pick up a copy of my most recent book, Victory or Death, Blockchain, Cryptocurrency, and the Fintech World. That's published by DV Books and distributed by Ingram Worldwide. While you're waiting for your copy of Victory or Death to arrive, check out our live stream, Tuesdays, 5 o'clock London time, midday New York time. It's the IPO Video Live Show. Catch the back episodes on LinkedIn and YouTube via IPO-Vid. Now online is IPO Vid 140 with fintech guru Chris Skinner on why we need intermediaries. And coming up this week, we're going to have Roland Bellegarde, the special advisor to the boss of the Saudi Stock Exchange. He's going to be talking about modernizing Saudi Arabian markets and modernizing Tadawul. Our finance book of the week this week, well, that dovetails neatly with our Exchange Invest weekends. We're currently on a space fetish. One down, one to go. The second one will be coming out on Saturday. That is all about the space economy. And indeed, hey presto, what better book could we pick for this week than The Space Economy by Chad Anderson? From global positioning, geospatial intelligence and satellite communications to commercial human spaceflight and interplanetary transportation, The Space Economy capitalized on the greatest business opportunity of our lifetime, explains how and why the space economy is. Well, I think the title is quite self-explanatory, The Opportunity of Our Lifetime. In product news this week, Nigeria is planning to trade crude oil on the Lagos Commodity Exchange, eyeing 50 million barrels in volume yearly. A Nigerian crude benchmark is a fascinating prospect in a multi-benchmark energy world. And clearly, folks in Abuja, Lagos, have an eye on the precocious success of Murban Futures, albeit they were blessed with the best derivatives management team, QV. ICE Futures have recently announced record trading activity in Murban crude as ICE Futures Abu Dhabi IFAD marks its third anniversary. Meanwhile, as merger talks are ongoing in GIFT City, as I mentioned, NSEIX has gained SEC class relief that permits US clients to trade on their equity index options contracts. Technology news this week, the SEC has targeted its own staff's texting and nixing WhatsApp on work phones. The SEC is banning WhatsApp for staff, although it might be worth considering how this will work in emerging markets or off-the-beaten-track locales where legacy technology, even cellular, is rubbish and the likes of WhatsApp is much more reliable. Hong Kong exchanges, they're going to be developing the Orion derivatives platform, providing best-in-class trading, clearing and risk management solutions for global clients. And finally, in technology news, MSCI, they've completed the acquisition of Foxberry. In regulation, I headlined at the start of this show the FSB moves this week, and it was the big regulation story of the week, the consultation report being liquidity preparedness for margin and collateral calls. The Brussels Bugle, aka the FT, pinpoints a key concern with the headline, hedge funds and commodity traders urged to hold more liquid assets, which is the drive for what I'm calling super liquidity. Seeking super liquidity in all fund held assets is thus driving greater illiquidity in certain instruments, which might make sense from a pure financial stability standpoint. At the same time, it isn't going to help the entire economy nor emerging markets, and that's a big problem here. We're at the classic Bertfegg nasty boot juncture. To enhance risk management in aviation, hang a weight off the back of the airliner to prevent it moving. Thus, it can't fly and no accidents can happen. Risk solved. Meanwhile, there's a highly troubling development as a who's who of the leftist financial literates in the US Parliament sign up to a Repro-Cana-Focahontas bill, which would preclude water markets in the USA, just as a mere T plus 24 years after PLY trumpeted water as a mega market by this decade. Years ago, I noted CME were leading with water markets, but they were and remain utterly abysmal about explaining why water markets work and are better than the alternative of opacity and, how can I put this in any other way, illiquidity, planned by the Squadcom intern and their oddball hard-left allies in Congress, Senate. Finally, in regulation, the New Civil Liberties Alliance, NCLA, has filed a suit against the SEC claiming that the agency, through its Consolidated Audit Trail or CAT program, is collecting mass amounts of personally identifiable data by forcing brokers, exchanges, clearing agencies and alternative trading systems to capture and send detailed information on every investor's trades in US markets to a centralized database. In Korean news this week, it was dominated by the untimely passing of MGEX CEO Mark Began. Very, very sad news indeed, coming so soon after they had made an announcement on April 10th, 2024, reported in EI 2935, that Citadel's Troy Kane was going to be joining Miami International Holdings as the overall MIAX futures boss, and Mark was going to be transitioning to become executive vice chairman of MGEX from his CEO role. Ms. Lillian Cheng will join Hong Kong Exchanges Group on May the 1st, 2024, succeeding Adam Singer, who's leaving Hong Kong Exchanges, so that Ms. Cheng can become the Group Chief Compliance Officer of HKEX. And then there was a black ball for the MCX nominees for the MD post from SEBI the regulator. With Padala Subi Reddy stepping down May the 10th, the speculation suggests SEBI seeks a more tech-savvy CEO. Given the train crash, which was the dismal installation by TCS of a replacement for the original 50IL 63 Moons software, it might not be the most ludicrous SEBI intervention on a C-suite appointment. Over in Big World, still in India, the Indian general elections began last week with phase 1 of 7. The process involves electing 543 members for the 18th Lok Sabha and will conclude on June the 1st with results on June the 4th. PM Narendra Modi of the BJP is seeking a third consecutive term from an electorate of 968 million individuals out of a population of 1.4 billion in the world's most populous nation, India having overtaken China earlier this year. If you'd like more fun facts about the Indian elections, check out the IPO Vid and Exchange Invest video feeds. We're doing lots of short videos these days on YouTube, TikTok and Instagram. And on that mysterious and magnificent note, thank you for listening to this Exchange Invest weekly podcast, 242. Join us daily via exchangeinvest.com, or if you have a new exchange you'd like built, get in touch. My name is Patrick L. Young, and I wish you a great week in life and markets. This show relates to the business of bourses. It is not to be construed as investment advice, nor are we making any investment recommendations. Please consult an investment advisor before you make any investments, and for goodness sake, do your due diligence and do not make investments without complying with the regulations in your home state. Exchange Invest cannot be held responsible for any investment decisions made as a result of our program, which is for entertainment purposes only. The material herein is copyright Patrick L. Young at the date of publication, while our music and sound effects are sourced from copyright-free sources. Thanks for listening to Exchange Invest Weekly, the exchange of information.